2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Today on First Lady and Friends, we had a great conversation with Liz Maurer and Mike Maurer. They are two of my very dear friends. Mike is a senior advisor of community outreach and intergovernmental affairs for Utah governor, my husband. And Liz has been working with me on my Show Up initiative. She is an incredible activist. She does amazing things in the refugee community and at the Humanitarian Center. Can't wait for you to take a listen. Let's get proximate. Welcome back to First Lady and Friends. We are here today with two of my, it's America's fun couple.
Oh boy. Pressure's on.
This is two of my dearest, dearest friends, Mike Maurer and Liz Maurer. They are just active in the community. Mike has been in several governor's administrations. Currently serves as the senior advisor of community outreach and intergovernmental affairs. Got it all in.
The more words, the more important. That's what I like to think about a title.
And Liz Maurer has been a community activist and been working really hard in the refugee community, works in the nonprofit sector, and just does incredible work with our, you both do a lot of work in our interfaith communities. What else? We can just keep going on and on. You guys, I can read your whole bios, but
let's
we can
not. Mike wrote mine. I don't know what's in there.
Well, hey, we appreciate being on the show, and we love the work that you're doing as Utah's First Lady, and are so excited with the continual focus on service and in reaching out to the community. As a bit of background, I serve as the governor's, as you noted, senior advisor with focus on a lot of the community outreach. Specifically in the office, I oversee the boards and commissions. We have 400 boards and commissions in the state. We're always looking for good people to serve. So if you're a listener and you want to serve, reach out. And we also get all the comments and calls that come in. And that varies depending on kind of what the hot issue of the day is. But on an average week, we can get to eight to 900 calls and emails. On a busy week, we can get, you know, several thousand, just depending on what the topic is. So I work with the small team there and then kind of travel around the state, meeting with a lot of groups, and kind of represent the governor and lieutenant governor to a lot of different organizations here in Utah.
And you do a phenomenal job, and you are basically related to the entire state, right?
I found out, and this is thanks to our unique Utah historical family patterns, but when RootsTech came up last week, I looked down and I had 58,260 relatives.
And so I knew
that's
it.
A
you
lot
are
of cousins. So that's a lot of cousins. So I try not to talk smack about people because I'm either related to them or definitely somebody that I know is related to them, and word will get back. So that's kind of—
He calls them all cousins.
All yes. Cousins. They're all my cousins.
You and all the Samoans, they're all,
we're
cousins
all cousins
as well.
We're all cousins.
I love it. Liz, you were—I didn't know you were born in Tallahassee, Florida.
I did. My dad taught at Florida State, so we're Seminoles fans. And he eventually took a job with my grandfather in Ventura. We moved to Ventura, did elementary school in Ventura. He helped sell his— or train the doctors on using my grandfather's medical equipment, and then the pull to come back to Salt Lake. That's where my mom's family was there. So by high school, junior high, high school, I was here. I graduated from Murray High School, so yeah. But yeah. So Utah's home. But yeah, I have roots in other spots, and
it's kind of fun to be able to say that. My boys were born in, my two eldest were born in Virginia, and they're always, they think that's really cool.
It does
that
give us depth because Utah tends to stay in Utah, and so it makes me exotic a little bit.
Yes, very.
Not really, but
well, in your family, tell us a little bit about, because you mentioned that your grandpa had a medical device, so you're a Sorensen, or your mom was a Sorensen,
right? So I am Jim and Beverly Sorensen's oldest grandchild. So I'm one of 47, and proud to be there. They were great mentors of mine, and part of maybe what I'll talk about today will interweave with what I learned from them and some of the opportunities it gave me, but also just the examples that I saw them.
Yeah.
You know, so
that's
amazing. Well, maybe we begin, Mike, a little bit with our background about how we have a little bit of a unique story, Mike and I.
Yeah, we wanted to hear this because we want to kind of go in the way back machine. Let's start with Mike. Let's start. You grew up.
I grew up in Farron, Utah. I am totally proud of my wonderful hometown of Farron. So I grew up in Farron, Utah, milking cows at the Lemons Dairy to distinguish it from the other four dairies that were there in Farron at the time. Graduate of Emory County High School, then went to BYU, U of U Law School. Was married my third year of law school to Sherry. We had four children. I was living in Provo, and she passed away from cancer. And I was working for Mayor Billings at the time and was then hired to work for Governor John Huntsman, and started on his first day on the job. And the Huntsmans are a wonderful couple and really think highly of them. And it was while I was there as a single dad with four kids that one day Neil Ashdown, his chief of staff, called me into the office and closed the door behind me. You never know what happens when the chief of staff calls you in. And he said, "Hey, I have somebody for you to date." And I says, "I don't think I'm ever going to date again. I've got my hands full with four little kids." And he's like, "No, you really need to go out with Liz. She is my one of my wife's best friends from high school, Andrea." And so and then he says, "Oh, by the way, she's a Sorensen." And I, you know, that name carried some cachet. And I was like, "I'm a kid from Farron. We don't have a stoplight in the entire county that I grew up in. We since have one in Huntington. But at the time, we didn't have a stoplight in all of Emory County. I don't know if we're really matched up for each other." He says, "Well, you at least need to go out with her." And so I gave her a call.
Right. And I laugh, and I'll, you know, I people throw this around a lot about being a Sorensen, and it is certainly part of me, and it's helped shape me, but I've never been defined by it. It's never been anything that has, I give the, an example to maybe my own detriment sometimes, that I could have, you know, ridden the wave a little bit, maybe, but like, it was never part of me. When I did a study abroad in college, I went to Israel, and my grandfather was friends when I left. He's friends with the mayor, Teddy Kollek, of Jerusalem. And so he gave me Teddy Kollek's personal line and said, "When you get over there, I want you to give him a call, tell him you're my granddaughter, and he'll have you in to lunch." And I thought, well, that's really embarrassing. I'm not going to do that. You know, like, I don't matter. I was just not. And so dumb me to never even called him. And now I look back and think, okay, I really had a great opportunity to meet like a world leader. And I didn't, because I just wasn't defined by this idea that like that made me somehow more special. And I just didn't see, I don't know. So even though people might say behind me that, she's a Sorensen. I grew up very normal. We drove our family vacations were in the station wagon to Idaho Falls. And, you know, one time in high school, we went to Disney World because grandpa took all of us. But I had a pretty normal upbringing. And so Mike didn't know that about me, but we met. We went out a couple times. He invited me to the State of the State. And it was a little bit much. I was not ready to be
very romantic.
I know. I was not ready to go in front of everybody and be his girl yet. So I kind of said, we got to not see each other for a little bit. And so we took a little break. And then I don't know if I thought I'm going to run into him at some benefit or something. I got to bridge this gap. So I called him again and he asked me out again. And we dated for a year. And at one point we did the math, or I did the math. He always says he was never any good at math, but on what ages our kids would be, because I had two. I was divorced and had two children that I had full custody of, and so they were with us all the time. And we about shook hands and walked away. Mm-hmm. When we married, our kids were 6, 7, 8, 9, 11, and 13. Mm-hmm. And then we just decided, you know, it wasn't crazy enough, so we just added a baby to the mix. So
And we're so glad you did.
We're so glad. Yeah, that's our 12-year-old Grace, and we love her with all our heart. So she's the best.
Yeah, so then the fun really began. We were a party in the box.
Let me clarify that. She's the best, meaning they're all the best. All the kids are the best. We don't have favorites. So if the kids listen, let me clarify.
But if there was one, she would be theirs as well.
I know. In fact, at one point, my mom we were having some artwork done, and we had a local artist do a picture of Grace, and I just wanted a small little one. Well, he did this giant, huge one, and it's original art, so you can't, like, it's not like, you know,
can we size that down a little?
And I was like, she's not the Queen of France. We can't. So he actually had to do another one for us that was smaller. And Mike puts a few weeks ago, he's like, I'm sick of this being in storage. We're putting it up. And so she has, like, the Queen of France picture of herself up in her room, but the other kids just roll their eyes.
That's fantastic. I love it. So after you were about to walk away, you counted up all the kids' ages and you said, we'll go for it anyway.
Let's jump. Yeah. And we really, I think the 1 + 1 always made sense. The 3 + 5 was a little bit more daunting. And nobody asked to be, I mean, they've all come from something traumatic, from a divorce, from a death. I mean, nobody is kind of coming into this thinking like, oh, let's start over the whole dynamic and let's begin this thing again. It was tricky, and you would have been hard pressed to find two different family styles blending each other. My situation had brought me to a point where I had made it very structured. I was very structured just in order to kind of make sense of in my divorce and everything. That's how I coped. And Mike's situation with his wife having breast cancer made it so that he went to a very unstructured. And so it was
kind of like raising feral cats.
I would never call your kids feral cats.
But it was kind of, yeah. We jokingly say at Liz's house, the TV was on 1 hour a day. At mine, it was on. It was only off 1 hour a day, and that's when I would turn it off before the TV that they fell asleep in front of on my way to work. Very different structure to cope. And, you know, the kids were loved and
I know. I don't even know if the kids know this, but a few months into the marriage, the house behind our house went up for sale, and I came to Mike and said, okay, I'm considering we can maybe put an offer in and get that house, and the kids will sleep here still, but just like after school, they have another place they can go to, and they can have their own space, and we have our own space, and then we'll come together for dinner and go to bed. And ultimately, we decided not to do it, but it was tempting.
Yeah, but they're great kids, and anyone who's been through a blended family, and there are a lot out there, realize, oh, it has a lot of unique challenges and blessings.
And we're in a totally different place now.
And at one point, we had 7 children in 7 different schools. So we're all about school choice, whatever works for that kid. But we've had public, private, charter, you name it. Liz has driven them to and from there. So
wow.
It's been fun.
Yeah. You know, Spencer's family is a blended family as well. Mm-hmm. And so I've talked, you and his mom, Lisa, would have a lot to talk about.
We have talked before to this, actually.
And it's an interesting thing. And he was the oldest of the whole gang. And he has a lot of stories of some really difficult times that, you know, that they had. And I don't think anybody does that and comes out without, you know, some
bruises and some learning and growth.
Yeah.
He was about the same age as our daughter. Wasn't he about 13 or so?
He was 11 when they were married. Okay. Yeah, 10 when they divorced, and 11 when he married Lisa. Yeah. When Eddie married Lisa.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's an interesting one. What do you wish people knew? What would you tell someone who was sort of contemplating this, or is ready to jump in, or is at the beginning of a blended family? What advice, or what would you do? What do you wish they knew?
I mean, everyone's dynamic and everyone's situation is a little bit different, but I think knowing at least that it's not going to look like there's going to be a new normal, and I think you have to understand that there's going to be some tough times, and people are going to be.
One thing we've also agreed on is no surprises with so many kids going on there. If I tell Liz, hey, let's not get each other a present for Christmas for, you know, for whatever reason, then we don't do it. Or we try to give each other some
space. That sounds
space,
like a really mean one.
It does sound mean.
We just mean say what we mean.
But, and so no surprises. That's kind of worked well for us.
We also learned to do things like we carved out a little room for every child. That was something. And some of the rooms were very small, but we kind of wanted a little space where everyone had – even if it weren't their own room, but everyone had their own little space where they could kind of go to, and it's a safe place for them where you can kind of have some time to process. We learned to do vacations. Very few vacations did we do the whole family. It was
anything times nine is a lot.
Yeah, but it was also overwhelming to plan. And so we did a lot of times where I take one of his kids and one of my kids. And it was, and so it was manageable at that level. And just learning to do some things that seemed like, no, the whole family has to be together because we're not trying. No, I think you can do things differently. Mm. And so that was something we learned that I think.
That was helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's something I'd never thought of, that don't put everybody together. It's okay not to put everybody together.
We tried a few times and it could get crazy. Yeah.
Did your kids, for the most part, did they get along? Was it, surely there's.
You know,
some hard things.
Yeah, I think for the most part, they really did. They're good kids, and now they all get along. I think there's natural loyalties to your own blood siblings and to your blood parent. I think there's a natural loyalty there, and that doesn't change just because you're now married. And so you have to acknowledge that and not be upset with the kid because they don't see everybody exactly the same. I think you need to be able to meet people where they're at and. I don't know. I think we did okay at that sometimes. And you can't go all those years also of not nurturing somebody and then kind of just think you can just kind of come in and say, okay, now I'm the boss and I'm in charge and everything. And they're just going to be like, oh, wonderful. This doesn't happen that way. And so he was his kid's soft spot and I was my kid's soft spot. And they did. They gravitated. I was a safer place. And that's just how it was.
Yeah.
It wasn't mean.
It's a comfort.
Yeah.
Comfort
and the real blessing we had is Grace. And we had six kids and our family's like, are you really thinking about another one? And Grace has been a blessing because she belongs to everybody. And that's the nice thing is she's the connector. And long after we're gone, she'll be the one that ties it together.
Yeah. And I think that's how Spencer felt about his two youngest, which were the two together. And his two youngest siblings are certainly. And then his other, he has another sibling from his mom and stepdad. And so those three sort of tied everybody, you know, the families together.
Where I say, you know, Mike's youngest son maybe wouldn't have come out before and sat on the bed alone with just me. Once we had Grace and the baby was in there on the bed, well, then it was approachable and he could come in and it was comfortable. Oh, so that just, you know, softened things and made him feel like he had a place.
I love that. Well, we want to continue talking about all the amazing things you guys are doing now, and we'll do that when we come right back.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
We're back here with Liz Maurer and Mike Maurer, my favorite couple and America's fun couple. you guys do amazing work outside of your work with the state and outside of your other jobs and all the things you're doing, parents and that. You're doing so much good in the world and making Utah such a better place. And one of the things that you guys together and us, we've been involved in is our work with refugees. And Liz, you've done so much. And we just did this event with the spouses of the legislature where we went to the grocery stores and took these families, and you helped plan that with our service initiative for Show Up. So talk a little bit about that and maybe some experiences you guys as a family have had with refugees.
Well, we knew I serve on your Show Up committee, and we knew as a committee we wanted to come up with something that would involve the legislative spouses during the session. So we brainstormed together and came up with this idea that obviously refugees are something that's close to my heart, and we wanted to show that this was a nonpartisan issue, something that we could come across the aisle. So we named this activity Across the Aisles, and we invited 17 newly arrived Afghan families to three different Macy's locations, and we paired them up with legislative spouses, usually a team of two of them, and they grocery shopped, and we gave them a heads up on a few things that they might like to get. I don't even know if you got that list, Abby.
We did. We had a list.
Okay, and a few ideas.
Yeah, so
but
we had a few
ideas. We were short on translators. That was the one thing that day. But actually, it made it a little bit more realistic to realize what I mean, these guys are navigating a whole new language and foods and packaging and, I mean, just pricing and
That's what I saw was this, I mean, I just things you don't think about, like, we go down and we figure out she wants pasta. And again, we had a translator sometimes, but she was kind of going between. So we had this, I mean, you know, you go to Macy's and there's a whole, like, huge section of all the different kinds of pastas. And then she goes, the woman that we were with, she reaches for this pasta. And first of all, like, she had no idea pricing. So it's right. Like the most expensive because it was like gluten-free pasta.
Exactly.
And I'm trying to explain to her what gluten-free is the language barrier. Anyway, that said to me, oh my gosh, this is
she
such
was navigating
a huge,
this on her own.
Yeah.
Which a lot of them are. And we had to, I mean, even we had to find rides for them to get there. There were just so many things, obstacles that they have to go to. But these people were so, I mean, we had asked these families and each of them had such incredible stories. I mean, the lady that you worked with, her husband was killed by the Taliban and just such incredible people. And they were, I don't know, I felt like it just, everyone left that day from both sides, both the families that had received and the families that had been there to serve, just left with a different understanding of each other. And it just opened our hearts. And I think they felt that love from us and we felt that from them. And it just, I feel like we crossed barriers that day, and it really was more than just giving money towards groceries, even though we were so grateful and they really were so grateful for that.
Associated
food.
Foods stepped up
big
in
shout
a
out
big,
to them.
Big way. Yeah.
So, but it accomplished more than that. And I think that's what I love. I always try and find projects that connect us with people. You know, one of the first things that Mike and I became involved in, maybe Mike, I can have you talk about how was having some students come into our home, and these weren't just refugee students. Tell them how it came about.
Well, they're Chinese students, and we had seven kids, and I had a busy job, and I get an email one day that says, hey, we have some Chinese students, and your child will get extra credit if you take a Chinese student into your home for a few weeks. And I said, oh, gosh, our kid could probably use extra credit. We'll sign up for two. So I came home and I kind of forgot about it because I just did it at work, a bunch of emails. And then about 2 weeks later, or right before they arrived, we got this message. And I said to Liz, we've got two Chinese students coming with us that I signed us up for. She's like, two? Yeah, we've got two coming. And I said to Abigail, I signed up so you can get extra credit for having these Chinese students. She was a student at Salt Lake School for the Performing Arts. And Abigail said to me, Dad, I'm not even in that class. I'm not even getting the extra credit. I'm like, oh, okay.
And then, it's one of those
too
things
late now.
You think you told your wife about, yes. But you haven't.
Told you. You think in your mind, I have told
so
Liz this.
That's happened so many times.
Where yeah,
like, oh, we have people coming
have dinner
for tonight. Dinner
tonight. Yeah.
Awesome, dear.
Yeah, yeah. Liz was a good sport about it. The other kids are a good sport about it. And we learned so much from having these
so
two young men.
So that was our first foray into mm-hmm. that, maybe. Right. They cooked dinner for us and they loved our kids and it was such a great experience.
It was great and our kids to see. I mean, seven kids, a lot of kids to grow up in a household with. But it was very interesting. They were heading off to Disneyland the last day. These are kids who grew up in one child families. Yep. And as they're getting dropped off, one of them gave Liz a great big hug and started to cry and say, I'd rather stay with you than go to Disneyland. He loved the family. He loved the closeness. So I thought it was so much fun that I signed us up for some more.
Right. We've also worked with an organization, UCCD. And
Utah Council for Citizen Diplomacy.
Yes. And they have done – they've connected us with – we can host families or individuals in our home that are traveling internationally and they come over to Utah. And so we've had dozens and dozens of them over at our home for dinner. Mm-hmm. And they're from all different places in the world. And it's so – I mean, it's an easy thing to do whether you're home with little kids. It's just something that I feel like you can do on any schedule. And it was so fun for our kids to meet people from all around the world. And we stay in touch with some of them.
It's also kind of sad. We had a group 8 years ago from Afghanistan. And at the time, we were like, hey, are we okay taking your picture? Oh, yeah, put it up. Well, then the government fell, and I had to contact everybody at the dinner that we had invited to meet them. Please delete your social media accounts. We don't know if these people will suffer harm from having come to America. It shows you the world is a dangerous, spooky place in many places, like the Ukraine right now and like Afghanistan right now. And boy, we take our freedom for granted so often and realize you get a chance to reach out and meet with these people, but realize, oh my word, there's some horrific circumstances on things we take for granted, just like having dinner at an American's home.
Yeah. Right.
But we also had three young men from Iraq.
We did have
a lot of fun.
Yeah, and that's one thing we have seen is that for all the things that go on, our home can be a safe place that evening or for that time where they're comfortable. And we find that teenagers and wherever they are in the world, that was surprising for us. You think maybe different cultures, and they have some differences, but a lot of the things were like the teenage boys just wanted to meet up with the girls and be on their phones, and you know, same exact issues that our kids were mm-hmm. you know, we were doing with our kids, and we thought, oh, it doesn't matter where they come from, and they had diverse, you know, one was a Syrian Christian, one was Kurdish, one was from the main city, just traditional Muslim, and it was just, we still stay in contact with them, they're friends of ours, and
they were friends with each other.
They weren't originally, you know, they were from different cultures and different parts of the, but that program brings them together. And so we've just had unique opportunities where we can connect with people. We have a family that lives here in, you know, in Salt Lake that's from the Congo, and they have just become dear friends of ours. They came over to cook dinner at our house. We brought them over to our house a few weeks ago, and we cooked dinner with them. We just laughed and laughed. We'd gone to the grocery store with them, and they picked out what they wanted, and we'd never heard of any of the items they bought, and they'd never heard of our items. We ate salmon and mashed potatoes. I thought that's what I taught them how to cook, and they'd never made those before, so they were taking notes, and we just – it was so much fun. We just laugh with them.
Well, the cool thing is there are a lot of opportunities to do it, but a lot of times people aren't aware that they're out there. So again, there are groups, for example, the Women of the World that works with refugee women, because so often women are the backbone of their families and their communities and are so hardworking. That organization helps them. The Utah Council for Citizen Diplomacy is another one. Liz volunteers at the Humanitarian Center teaching civics every week to refugees from around the world. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints does a wonderful job in bringing in people and trying to give them employment and skills. And while they're doing that, giving them some education as well. So there are a lot of opportunities throughout Utah. And kind of my message in community outreach for the governor is get involved. And it may be refugees, it may be the homeless, it may be your son's baseball team or your daughter's soccer team. But we're a state that prides ourselves on giving back. And it was that's the key thing. That's what we try to do. Our focus has been kind of international because we've enjoyed it. But there are so many other areas where people can get involved, and so many areas where we need them to get involved.
Yeah, people say, "Oh, Liz, you do so much with refugees," and the reality is, I do. I'm an example of an everyday person who has a normal life that's busy, but that does finds little moments to be able to do things. And I've been able to do that. And a lot of these things, like the UCCD, we bring in families to our home. So that's a simple thing I can just do when I have a chance. They're just starting that up again. They're bringing in people from like 12 different countries this month alone. And you can just go sign up and invite some people to come to your home for dinner. That's really simple. Or like the Hope for Afghanistan. That's where I connected with these refugees that we brought to the event. You can sign up and just volunteer to do like that one day, give a ride to the grocery store. You just drive them, or you can help their kids, or their kids are starting in school here and the parents don't speak language, so you help their kids with their homework a little bit. They're just very manageable kind of things. Like, you know, you can sign up to teach an ESL class like I do. I do that through the ESLC. They just give me some training and I landed at the Humanitarian Center, but you can do it other places. I mean, that's a little bit more time commitment. I do that an hour a week, you know, but a lot of the things are just a ride here or things there that people could do, or they could have a family over, or they can put together. With our book group one time, we read a book on education, and we built backpacks for refugees, served refugees. They'll tell you everything they need to have in the backpack. And all I did is told people in the group, you bring this. And we put together 10 backpacks that night, and it was easy. Yeah. So there's just some things you can do and include your kids.
And it's a beautiful thing that you're doing, because I think when we do get proximate to somebody that has a different story than us, We are enriched and our families are enriched, and we do hear these stories. You know, our first experience, you talk about having a whole bunch of kids and you bring these people. I don't know why my parents did that, but I was probably in middle school, high school when we had an exchange student from Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. And I've always had this connection to Costa Rica ever since. And years and years and years later, Spencer and I went on a trip to Costa Rica, and I looked him up, and we had dinner with him, and it was so crazy because it had been since I was in high school that I'd seen him. And anyway, it was just a really cool experience, and I have a connection to Costa Rica now because I love that.
Well, and it's really cool, and that's one of the cool things about Utah is that we have so much connectivity. The last 2 weeks have been absolutely horrific with what's been going on in the Ukraine. But what's been so nice to see is how many Utahns have deep, sincere ties to that part of the world and are stepping up to help in a big way. And those who don't have ties to that area of the world who are stepping up to help out in a big way. And it is. It's a small world. I grew up in the small town of Farron, but my mother was the type who, if she visited a national park, she would invite the guests from Germany to come to our home. So we always had people coming into our home, the Japanese exchange students, or Dad knew I was interested in politics, so he'd invite the attorney general when he came to Farron, come by our house for breakfast, or the congressman. So my parents were the type that really opened up their homes. Mm-hmm. And we've tried to do the same thing because it's how you get proximate. And once you know someone from those countries, boy, it changes your world perspective.
One thing we've said is this next generation, our kids' generation, does so much better than we do at connecting and seeing people for who they are. And I wanted that was part of my motivation, is I wanted my kids to see me doing that too.
Yeah.
And I knew that they would fit right in if I brought people in the home or whatever. They knew how to handle it.
Yeah.
And I think that's really rewarding to see as a parent that sometimes people find this is, they think it's so difficult to do, but believe me, your next generation will just know right how to handle it.
That's exactly right. And that's what my parents taught us that. I mean, we had several, we had exchange students from Japan, we had from Costa Rica. And then I remember this just reminded me when you said that we were, I think we were just on a picnic up in the mountains one day and ran into a couple from Switzerland. And they became just dear friends. They came down to the farm for every year. They would travel in their RV from like Canada to Mexico, and just that was just their what they did now as in their retirement from Sweden. And every time they came through, they stopped at our farm for a week and put their
I love that
put their camper there, and we'd ride horses with them, and we'd do all this stuff, and they just became really dear friends to us. And Hans and Trudy. I don't remember their last names.
Ours were Peter and Nina from Germany.
So you just, it's funny that, and I think, I remember somebody, and my mom had a Navajo girl that lived with them, Angie Jo, and when I was very little, she lived with us. And so one time somebody said to my mom, you collect people. And she already had 10 kids, but she just collected people. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, it enriched my life, and it made me be able to look outside of my own little world and connect with people that have a different story. So it's a very cool experience. I love that you guys are doing that, and you're a great example of that. We want to continue this conversation. You've done a ton of stuff around our interfaith communities as well, and we want to talk about that when we come right back. We're back here with Liz and Mike Maurer. We are talking about, we've talked a lot about refugees and connecting with other people and different cultures and how it enriches our lives. Let's also talk about the work that you've been doing in our interfaith community. You guys do a lot to bring all different faiths together throughout the state. And let's just talk a little bit about what you guys have been up to there.
Well, it's one of the things, on a personal note, I grew up as a kid where I always swore if we could go to 6 hours of church on Sunday, my father would have us do it. And whenever we traveled.
How do you do it too?
Two was kind of a shock. But they were very devout people, wonderful, wonderful parents. But it's interesting, you become your parent. So I love to travel and visit different faith groups. In fact, last year we tell the story, Liz took the two of the girls to Hawaii. And I was supposed to go, and I said, you know, I'm trying to go to church in all 50 states. I've never been to church in South Dakota. Do you mind if I skip out on Hawaii?
So he stayed home from Hawaii and went to church in South Dakota. And
and if anybody knows Mike,
I took my girls to Hawaii.
Yeah.
That is not – that won't shock you.
Yeah. I got in a Catholic mass in Leeds, South Dakota, as well as Episcopal service, and had enough time left over for a Presbyterian. So I love different churches. I love faith. I love how faith unites communities, and organized religion of whatever variety brings people together to do a lot of good for humanity. And one of the examples I've tried to follow here in Utah is Pamela Atkinson. And Pamela has spent years working to unite people of many different faiths and to get them involved in the community and to make them feel that they have a voice and are an important part of the community, because they do and they are. And so there are times when we're united because of tragedies in religious communities, the challenges, the not challenges, but the terrible shootings that took place in Pennsylvania at the synagogue. And that's when we get together with Chabad and the Zippels, and also with Rabbi Spector and Congregation Kolami and our other religious Jewish congregations around the state. Same thing goes for our Muslim community when they've had challenges. Liz and I not too long ago were at the mosque in West Jordan greeting all of these Afghan refugees who had literally just arrived a day or two before and were totally shocked, and we're trying there to help them out. And again, it's a faith-based community that's uniting people and helping them. But the goal is to make sure that we're crossing a, you know, we're getting to know each other. And, you know, one thing I encourage people to do is it's great to go to your own faith or not. That's, you know, we've got freedom of religion. But attend a church that isn't your own, that isn't your own denomination. Find out what it's like at a Baptist service or an evangelical service. Our friend the Ogilvies invited us up a couple weeks ago to Ogden to go to Washington Heights Church. And it was a wonderful worship, spirit-filled experience. And we enjoyed that, and we got to know people a little better. So faith is one way to do that. And it's something that we encourage in the state, not in a separation issue, but in a community outreach sort of issue, because a lot of times when there's a crisis and we need help for refugees, we look to Catholic Community Services, or we look to some of our various religious denominations, because we need help. Government can only do so much, and our faith-based communities are so incredibly wonderful at reaching out and helping the homeless and those who are suffering and those who face so many challenges.
And on a lighter note, one of the ways that Mike thanks Pamela Atkinson for all that she does, if you know my husband, you know that he's known for his photos that he will send you at any hour
yes,
of
indeed.
The day. And so literally everywhere we travel in the world, whenever we see a Presbyterian church, my daughter that's here is nodding her head. He'll yell, "Pull over!" And we have to get a picture of the Presbyterian church, and he will send it to Pamela. So she has received hundreds of pictures.
I have been with him when we've yes. done that. Do you remember when we were in Cleveland and we were actually driving around looking for a Presbyterian church mm-hmm. for Pamela to take a picture to send her, and we ran into the Christmas story house on accident.
Perk for us.
It was great. But in a sketchy part of Cleveland.
Yeah, kind of was. But I always think of Pamela wherever I go, and every time I see a Presbyterian church, I'm like, I've got to let Pamela know.
Well,
I'm thinking of her.
We have one of the favorite things that we do every year is go to Pamela's Presbyterian Church, and it's a beautiful church on South Temple. And every October, she invites us to be a part of Reformation Sunday services, where they come, and it's the most fun church my kids have ever been to.
Curtain, the tartans.
Yes. And I keep threatening, I'm going to bring my tartan in one of these days.
I love it. She would be fine with it. My grandpa was really one of the big things he was involved in. He worked with the Christians, Jewish, and the Muslims. And he really funded a lot of DNA research, and that was a big thing that he did. And he just believed that if people could find out how they were connected to each other, then they would see each other differently. And that's, you know, in our faith communities are really, I'd love to encourage anyone's faith that they have. And we just need all that goodness. And I just love it. Not the same faith as me. That doesn't bother me a bit. Let's bring us all together.
The tribalism surrounding religion and just come together and appreciate all
good. I believe all good comes from God. And so I just want to celebrate all good.
I love that. I love that. So
well, talk about, I know your work.
Right. As we're doing this 1-2-3 challenge with Abby Cox's show up service, we're highlighting different communities around the state each month and their efforts to serve. And May will be Religion Month, and we're just going to be reaching out to different denominations and different parts around the state to get together with their congregations and participate in some kind of service project. We'd love to be involved if they let us know about it. Maybe we'll show up and surprise you at one of your activities. And so just planting that seed. But I will be reaching out to specific pastors and all different denominations around the state to join us.
So we're excited about this. This is just a time to really connect with our communities. And we know that this is the thing about Utah. We're not doing anything new here.
Right.
Because Utahns are serving. We just want to recognize it as a tool to bring our communities back together. It's an interesting thing that's happened through the pandemic that in world crises, as we're seeing right now in Ukraine and Russia and the things that are going on there, we see it really is kind of another global crisis. And when those things have happened in the past and currently, it's a time for us to really reflect as a country and as a state and communities to really depend on each other, come together. How can we serve together? We've always done that. We did that during 9/11. We've done that, you know, that it was done during World War II. It was done in a lot of these times of global crisis and community crisis. We come together. COVID was such a unique crisis that it was literally something that we couldn't do. We couldn't come together.
Right.
We literally had to stop going to church or at least, you know, it changed
together, gathering
in a lot of ways. I mean, there were a lot of things that changed and we were actually pulled apart. And I think that's why we saw so much fear and outrage and anxiety, and because we need each other. We're wired for connection. And I think the purpose behind our service initiative is not to say, oh, we aren't serving enough. We really need to get Utah out there serving. That's not the purpose. The purpose is to show what Utahns are all about. And it's a time to bring people back together after COVID and really connect as communities. And I just think this is a beautiful way to do it. And I think if you have a project, if you want to start thinking about it in your congregation, in your, you know, with your fellow congregants, what you want to do, and then we would love to show up at your show up project.
Love it. Yeah.
Well, Utah's been so wonderful. I remember one of the most touching moments I've had. I've had the opportunity now to work for three great governors, but it was when Katrina took place. And I'm standing with Pamela and Governor Huntsman as they literally unload people from the plane from New Orleans who had no idea where they were going. Wow. And they ended up here in Salt Lake. And who were the first groups to reach out and help out? It was our church communities. And then two other times when we've had severe windstorms and trees are down all over the place. And the governor activates, Governor Herbert activates the National Guard, and they can do so much. But who's getting so much of it done? Church groups. Yeah. Church youth groups with chainsaws and men and women with pickup trucks, and they're loading them up. And one group even took a lot of this, of the down trees, to the Navajo Reservation to help in that part of the state. And so time and again, when there's a big challenge, it's all Utahns coming together, but particularly our church groups who are organized and can take on specific projects and help make things a heck of a lot better.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Let me ask you this last question before we end. Can you think of a Utahn that has influenced you, somebody that you look up to that sort of embodies all this stuff we've been talking about? Is there somebody that comes to mind that you can think of?
Mine's a cheat because I'm gonna say my grandmother, Beverly Taylor Sorensen. She started Artworks for Kids, and she just was the embodiment of believing that you could do it, and she always made you feel like you were the most important person in the room, and she always saw you for who you were, and she always dreamed big and she accomplished big. And I love driving by schools now and just seeing her name, that the programs are still carrying on. And she's mine. But that's kind of a cheat because I
– No, I think it's beautiful.
She was in every bit of my hero.
Well, and I would say I've mentioned Pamela Atkinson, and we all love Pamela. I would also say Governor Olene Walker. Olene Walker was a real trailblazer. And this week we're commemorating International Women. And – she was so hardworking and cared so much about people and would sleep like 4 hours a night and earned a PhD. And I have to remember, I've worked with governors. I know how incredibly busy their schedules are. And I'll never forget, she took the time as governor to come down to my late wife's viewing. And I was talking to Amanda Covington, and Amanda talked about, oh, she had a child and the governor rearranged her schedule, and Amanda's in the hospital with her new baby. Who shows up? Governor Walker. I mean, that was the kind of person she was. And Utah's been blessed with wonderful leaders. We have governors that care. We have good, honest people who are doing the right thing. For the right reason. And I think Governor Walker was certainly one who embodied that.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I guess, you know, if I were to pick somebody, it's really hard. You know, there's been so many people in my life. But I've talked a lot about my grandfather, who was in World War II. He was actually, you know, he was shot on Iwo Jima and survived. And but I think mostly about my grandma, who was home, and and she sort of embodies that whole generation of women who were doing really tough things, on their own, and they sort of built the foundation that we stand on now. Those women who kept it going. She was actually pregnant with her second child, her daughter, my aunt, who was. She had no idea if my grandfather was alive or dead, and in fact was sent a telegram saying he had died. Wow. And they caught it before it got to her because they realized he wasn't dead. Yeah. And so you know, these are women who really, you know, her and her generation of women who really held it all together.
Yeah. The greatest generation were men and women.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So we have just an embarrassment of riches here in Utah as far as people who are giving and generous. And I count you two as two of them. And I'm so thankful that you were here today to share your stories.
Well, thank you so much. And we love what you're doing, and your focus is services, First Lady. I mean, it blesses a whole lot of lives. Everyone from kids in foster care to refugees to, you know, so many others that you're reaching out and helping.
Yeah, thank you.
I meet a lot of different people with my husband's job, and some people just, or because of my family relationship, and you can be suspect of some people why they want to know you and the connections they can make. But Abby, you've always been genuine, and you're a true friend, and I thank you for having us here today. And now we sound very serious, but we're actually a lot more fun than this.
Thank you so much for being here. If you'd like to get involved in some of the organizations that we talked about today, they are Utah Council for Citizen Diplomacy, ESLC, Women of the World, boards.utah.gov, Hope for Afghanistan, and Serve Refugees. Thanks for being a friend.